The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Hello, I'm Stuart Clarkson and welcome to a new year on the Radio Today programme. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be hearing about some of those big changes coming up. We'll be talking to Chris Evans's boss in a couple of weeks, all being well. And we've got bids in with Radio 2 for Zoe Ball and Sarah Cox, so fingers crossed you might hear them on this podcast. But this week, it's all about the roundtable. Trevor and guests are going to dissect some of the stuff that was on air over Christmas and look ahead to those big changes in 2019. Happy New Year, Trevor.
Thank you, Stu. Happy New Year. This month's roundtable was recorded, as usual, at what's now the former home of Jazz FM. It's been newly decluttered by its new owners, Bauer, and turned into a comfortable studio for podcasts and other pre-recordings. As you'll hear, one of our guests was unable to join us at the last minute, but I think you'll agree there are some interesting topics raised and some excellent recommendations. Let's meet our guests.
Hello, I'm Nick Goodman. I'm a radio consultant. Hello, I'm Adam Bowie, and I do commercial strategy for the BBC World Service.
And the person we are missing is Ian McIntosh, who would have been our host. He runs Muddy Knees Media, who are here at the old Jazz FM building, and he has suffered from what is coming to be known as the peppermint tea incident. Do you know much about this, Adam?
Only what was on the email, which was intriguing.
Well, poor old Ian, who I think it's fair to say enjoys a drink.
Right.
You wouldn't be surprised if you heard that he'd fallen downstairs while carrying, you know, a six-pack of Heineken. But no, he fell downstairs carrying a mug of peppermint tea.
It's a very New Year injury.
Well, look, we wish you well, Ian, and we'll see you on a subsequent roundtable, I'm sure. But honestly, have a look at yourself. Peppermint tea. I mean, have you ever drunk peppermint tea? It is like having a cup of tea whilst sucking on some, you know, boiled sweets of some sort.
Tea is honey. You've got to get some honey in there.
Do you do that, Adam?
Mostly by mistake. yeah, that's about it.
Okay, so this is the first roundtable of 2019, and we must therefore start, as we've got Nick here, by just talking about your fantastic music mix for the fireworks on the South Bank, which you do with your business partner,
yes.
Dan. Tell us how that came together, because it came to have a little bit of kind of afterword.
Yes, there was a bit of a reaction to it this year. We've been doing it for about 5 or 6 years now, Dan McGrath and I, my partner in crime on this project. And we work with Jack Morton, who are a big events company, and they work with the Mayor of London's office, and they bring us in to help put the music mix together. And this year there was certainly a brief from the Mayor of London, which was to embrace all things European. I think there's no secret that that was the desire to do that. So we had all sorts of European artists in there. We had foreign voices, which seems to get the Daily Mail very upset, and the message that London is open. And so that was the brief. And you can tell from the reaction that I think we delivered on the brief, both in terms of the music and in terms of the lighting and the fireworks. And there was a lot of comment about the blue London Eye and the
there wasn't. I just wanted to just kind of move away from the visuals a bit and just talk about the sound.
Yeah.
How physically do you do it? You know, when you think, right, well, I need a bit of Je T'aime and a bit of Don't Look Back in Anger or whatever you've decided, how then do you approach putting that mix together?
Yeah, well, we start the process in the summer, believe it or not, and we sit, and it's a really collaborative process where we're trying to pick either big hits of the year, or if there's a significant anniversary, or perhaps someone died and we want to put in some of their music there. And you literally whittle it down and you work out what will work with fireworks, what's good in terms of sonically. Obviously, you don't want just two or three bits of music, because then they'd be 3 minutes long each. So we have to, you know, do some real handbrake turns on the edits and all that kind of stuff. And it goes through about 17, 18 different variations until we get out with the one we want. So
and
it's quite a long process.
Do you put together a mix which they then choreograph the fireworks to?
Yes.
It's that way round.
Yeah, so the music comes first, and we always have the fireworks choreographer in the room and in the conversation at all the time. Then when we're happy, which is usually around November time, then they start work on the fireworks to the music soundtrack.
What's the first step when you do something like this? Do you find a kind of backing beat to lay everything over?
No, not really. No, we just listen to great tracks from the year. And
you think, oh, that'll crossfade with that.
Yeah, that'll work with that. We've done some nice mashups along the way. So we'll say, okay, that In Excess hook, that works really well with The Weeknd. So we're going to do a little mashup on that. Or we're going to have, I don't know, Video Killed the Radio Star. We're going to have that bit. And we're going to mix that with, whatever it is. So it really is just a blank sheet of paper. And we're allowed to have our imaginations run wild, which is great fun, because I'm able to exercise that creative muscle and bring some kind of musical ideas to the table.
And work with some people whose first language is English, which is a bit unusual for you.
Yes, indeed. It is a UK-based project, so that's good for me.
One final question. Can we hear it anywhere?
Yes, all the mixes are available on our SoundCloud page. So if you find it and look for New Year's Eve Fireworks on SoundCloud, you'll find the mix there.
Fantastic. Thank you, Nick. Adam, let's start with 2019 and all these extraordinary changes that are happening to, well, Radio 2, obviously, Six Music, Capital, the Greatest Hits Network. I mean, where does it stop? What would you pick out as the big highlights to look forward to?
I mean, so far, obviously, as we speak on sort of the Wednesday, that sort of Radio 2 and Six Music have made their changes, and I've definitely tuned in a bit to both of those. I think realistically for me, Six Music is more my choice, but we're hearing broadcast professionals here doing new shows and they're in their first weeks, and I don't think there's any way you can judge anything at this point. Nothing's going to be disastrous, and you can't tell how brilliant or not they will be in due course. I think everyone is very interested to see what Evans does. I think just because it's the big money signing, and I'm curious actually to see when they start marketing it. I've not really noticed any marketing so far, apart from a few bits on social media, and whether they will sort of allow him to find his feet a bit before they go great guns, or will there be wraparounds on the papers and you name it. I mean, because News UK owns the group, there's always been a bunch of what we call house ads, effectively free ads for sort of the talk group of stations and Virgin. But I'm not really counting those. I'm talking about, are we going to see primetime ads for it in the middle of The Voice on a Saturday night, that kind of thing.
Nick, you've been involved in a few station relaunches in your time. What would you do if you were running Virgin Radio?
I'd allow it a little bit of room to breathe to start with, and I think Adam's quite right. They probably won't do a massive spurt of marketing until the show's a few months in. I think there might be an initial bit of puff and PR around that as well. I'm not sure they'll do the big TV ad in The Voice. I'm not sure that's quite where they're going for. But it's going to take a little bit of time to bed in. If you remember when Chris moved from Drive Time to The Breakfast Show to take over from Sir Terry, that didn't work straight away. And they had to kind of go away and just rethink it and look at exactly what they were doing and the music they were playing and the features, etc. So although there's a significant amount of a similar team moving to Virgin, it will feel like a very different show. And, Chris, he'll want to get it right from the start. And there'll probably be a lot of frustrations initially and all that kind of stuff. So I think Adam's right. That's going to be the one to watch and listen to.
Do you think Simon Mayo is going to end up on Virgin?
Well, that's that's one of the rumours. And if he does, I think that'd be a really smart move. And it's a shame what happened at Radio 2, because I think that was his natural home. And it's just kind of the fallout from that, as we can see with the change of the schedule. So that wasn't handled particularly well at the time. It would be great if he's back on Music Radio. But at the same time, I could see him popping up anywhere, frankly, because he's such a good, versatile broadcaster. I wouldn't be surprised if Simon Mayo joins LBC is a kind of headline, So I could see him anywhere.
Adam, you spend a lot of time number crunching. Mm-hmm. From where you sit, what's the rationale for Chris? Why is he leaving his massive, great FM audience to join a tiny digital station?
I mean, you could start saying money.
that is one argument.
I think, and actually, even without being flippant, I think the whole thing about the BBC talent thing certainly rubbed up. We've seen Eddie Mayer. I think there's a bunch of people like that who have not been happy for various reasons about the whole thing. I think there's a really interesting thing that they're going ad-free. They're being sponsored for the first period. They haven't set a definitive time limit on it. My thinking from that is they've not really got any radar to sell. As you say, they're at a tiny level at the moment. So the money you'd be losing is relatively insignificant. So why don't you try and pick up some of those Radio 2 listeners and get people used to the idea of Chris and everything, and then introduce the ads at a later stage? They won't really... We've got this big changes now. We're not going to find out any of the numbers until August. You know, it's hard to second guess someone like Chris Evans. I think, you know, he obviously likes the idea that he can build a station around him. I think it's interesting whether Simon Mayo, whoever goes there, what they haven't really done so far is talked about anyone else that might be supporting it. They've got a couple of sister stations that they're launching, but whether there's sort of any other big names to kind of bulk it out, you know, to hold on to that audience, because, you know, they're going to drift off them.
I mean, whatever way they go, they're onto a bit of a winner, because, no disrespect intended, they're coming from a zero base. I mean, it's got, what, 400,000 listeners, 1.3 million hours, which is, I checked, it's less than BBC Radio Devon. So, you know, there isn't a massive audience there. So whatever happens in August when we get the first real steer on the numbers, it's going to be up. You know, there's going to be a good story to tell. The PR machine will kick in. You know, Chris has doubled the audience, all that kind of stuff, which is great. It's going to be a long way to go. And I think that as we've seen with when Moyles moved to Radio X as well, it takes a little bit of time. Chris is going to bring some audience with him, but are they going to get to that 2.5 million stage, which is where the kind of top digital stations are at the moment in terms of Six Music and Kistry? I'm sure we've all read Phil Riley's blog about his back of the fag packet calculations, and I think he said it needed about 4 million and reach and 25 million hours to make it worthwhile, etc. But as you say, they're going down a different business model. I think there'll be ads on the station in a year. On the breakfast show in a year.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't think that's a long-term play. I think it's an initial play to make sure that Radio 2 people who can find it feel very comfortable. It's the same kind of show. Vassos is there. It's got the same feel to it. There'll be the same sort of features as well. And so it's just to kind of not make them feel afraid that Carphone Warehouse or whatever is trying to sell them a mobile.
Well, this brings us on to, well, what would you do if you were looking after the new Zoe Ball Radio 2 breakfast show, which at the time of recording this hasn't yet started? How much of the Evans furniture do you try to keep, or do you start again with a blank page?
Well, I think it's... you know, Zoe's very, very different to Chris in many respects, but they both have something in common, which is this bright, optimistic, happy outlook on life and broadcasting. You know, Chris always said his show was the nation's alarm clock, and he was there to give you a bright start to the day. And I think Zoe brings that feel. If you watch her on BBC Two on the Strictly Come Dancing spin-off, she's just happy. You know, she's happy all the time. And so that's a commonality between the shows. I think over time, again, they'll bring some new features and some new ideas. Inevitably, some of those will drop off as you have the initial quiz that starts off for the first 8 weeks and then vanishes mysteriously. So that there'll be a new feel. But I think Radio 2 are fairly comfortable about this because, you know, people know Zoe. She's a safe pair of hands. I think she'll be absolutely fine. So if anything, that's the safe one.
Adam, what does success look like for Radio 2 in a year's time?
I think Radio 2, I agree very much with Nick. I don't think Radio 2 is going to see massive changes in listening. There might be some shifts. They could be down, they could be up. We'll wait and see. But I think the Radio 2 audience is kind of there for the whole thing and not necessarily the individual bits. And that's why I don't think, even when there was a lot of criticism over the sort of Simon Mayo, Joe Wiley show, that show didn't bomb or anything in the ratings. And I think actually largely the audience will stay the same. It's a stable boat. Don't forget, Chris, you know, like many of the sort of big breakfast show hosts, has had a number of weeks off a year. He's, you know, when he was doing Top Gear, he announced that was a big lucky part of his thing, that he had, I can't remember the number, but sort of double-digit weeks a year off. And so the Radio 2 audience is already used to having various other people sit in for that show. So I just think the station is bigger than the sum of its parts, and so it will just carry on. And that's the same in Drive as well.
Help me understand what's going on at Bauer with hits and greatest hits, but not smash hits anymore.
The good times sound like this.
Oh, no, they don't.
Well, listen, I mean, it's, you know, What do you want us to do? So,
I'd just like to pick it apart literally a bit, understand. I mean, I get the capital, heart, smooth. I understand that strategy completely. I'm just not sure what the hits and greatest hits, and we've still got Hallam. And what's going on?
What I think they're doing is, and you know, I no knowledge of this, but I think you're right. So you've got the global side of things, which is brands. And I would fully expect, by the way, that, you know, many of those breakfast shows are going to be fully networked later this year at some point. But I think what Bauer's definitely trying to do is where they think they have strengths, they're going to stick with the localness because they think they can maximise that and monetize that better. But anywhere where there's any weakness, go to a brand, and then it means building up and creating a brand. So hence these new networks, and it's probably trying to have your cake and eat it and play slightly the same game that Global's going, because there's money to be made there. You can do all kinds of, you know, you open yourself up to a bit more when you do national shows with national promotions and do bigger things and make more money. But at the same time, you know, if you've got a strong show in some of the regions,
okay,
some of these stations,
I understand that, I think, but if I'm Bauer's sales team, what's the advantage of my pitch as opposed to the global pitch? Because Global are going in there and saying, you want these kind of people? Buy heart. You want these kind of people? Buy capital. Bauer are going in and saying, well, we've got a few of these people that we're reaching through this brand, Greatest Hits, and then we've got a few of the same kind of people that we're reaching in Sheffield because they're still listening to Hallam. How does
so
that work?
When they pitch it, they're not going to pitch it by the station name necessarily. So they will still brand, although, and I forget what they're called now, but they used to be the Big City Network effectively.
Yeah.
And so that's the way you go to advertisers and you say, look, this is what you're buying. But, you know, when you're at a more local level and when you're marketing it, you can still say, this guy is really big. This is the voice. This breakfast show is the voice of this city. And if you can do that, and if you strip away, if Global comes to that point, you know, that's certainly at the moment with some of their shows, they do have the leading number one shows in those cities. But now if you put someone else in, they risk losing that because someone else could nip in and go, I'll have your guy or your lady who's number one in the city, and we'll put them on our Bauer or whoever else. But, you know, across the piece, it makes sense for Global, but Bauer can still do that, and so you can get that, maybe have that number one station where you could.
What's your perspective on this?
You know, I had a little listen to the Greatest Hits launch and first day, and it feels like they've carved out a little niche for themselves. So it doesn't sound like Heart, it doesn't sound like Magic, it doesn't sound like Absolute. You know, it's kind of its own thing, and they almost had a test run with this with kind of Radio City 2, which was that kind of format, which I think ended up doing very well and probably had a greater market share than Radio City in Liverpool. There's lots of ABBA, there's lots of Queen, there's David Bowie, there's Madonna. So the format, if you like, is a fairly easy one. I even heard a top 10 at 10, so that, you know, it still hasn't died. And Mark Goodyear was doing, I think it was pre-recorded top 10 at 10 because he was doing the Breakfast Show Radio 2 at the same time as well. So I think it's a nice little format, you know. If people find it and enjoy it, great. You know, will it do well for Bauer? Yeah, probably scoop up more than they would have done if they hadn't done anything and left them all as twos, and I didn't understand all the ones and twos and threes and all that. I was lost, you know, and I kind of work in the industry, so let alone the listeners go, what's going on here? So I think it will do okay. I know that, you know, we're talking about audio here, but who's designing these logos? Come on.
You and I, Nick, normally meet in foreign parts, and I normally interview you at the end of some conference. And I usually ask you why European radio groups are so interested in using British consultants like you. And I've never really had a satisfactory answer, so I'm going to try again.
Why do they use British consultants?
Why do they think we're good at this?
Okay, so I think there is certainly a view that UK radio is pretty good. And I think we have a lot to thank the BBC for in that. So the BBC casts a big shadow over the image of UK audio and radio. And in fairness, we do it pretty well. You know, I travel a lot. I go to a lot of countries. Some of the stuff I hear isn't great. Some of the stuff I hear is super as well. but we've got an image of doing great radio in the UK. So it enables people like me to go and share some of the ideas, some of the things I've heard, bring those to different parts of the world, and also import things back into the UK as well. You know, so it's.
Yeah. I had a conversation with somebody I won't name who writes about radio in the UK in a very respectable magazine. And he said to me, I've just been asked to write down a list of the best radio in Britain, speech radio. And he said, I hadn't realised until recently that I don't really like Radio 4. It's just not very good anymore. He said, I'm finding almost everything I listen to in speech radio is via podcasts. Now, is he right about this? Is the kind of podcast world teaching British radio that it might not be quite as good as it has always said it is at speech?
I think the podcast world has certainly changed, made changes to the way some radio is done, but there's also can be a podcasty way of doing it, which is different to radio. They do work slightly differently. Radio still has to fit time. You know, you've still got to have clock hours and things like that. And I also think you always need to be careful of the sample size of one. Just because I don't listen to anything else but podcasts does not mean that everyone else doesn't. We know that 90% of the population listen to the radio every week. So Radio 4's listening is broadly pretty static. I don't think you can really make sweeping generalisations like that. I like to think...
I like them, though. I might like to do a podcast called Sample Size of One.
Sweeping generalisations with Trevor Dan.
There you go. Yeah, there's always that. I'm going to make a radio station that is perfect for me and no one else is going to listen to it.
Good point. And I've been listening to something which we'll talk about in a little while, which has credits which go on for literally a minute and a half, which just shows you how many people are involved in making some of these podcasts.
I counted the credits to an episode of The Very Fine Serial, the recent third series, and it was either 25 or 27 names were name-checked at the end of that. Now, I don't think there's another... Even if you add in execs from, you know, who've done no more than sign the cheque for some of the bigger shows, I don't think there's anywhere in UK audio that gets anywhere close to that.
It's the Radio Today Roundtable for January 2019. Adam Bowie is here, Nick Goodman is here. I'm Trevor Dan, and we shall have a continuation after this.
Quick pause from the Roundtable to tell you about Clean Feed. It's what you need to get for your station or podcast in 2019. If you're doing an OB, an interview down the line, co-hosting a show from somewhere different to normal, Clean Feed is great. It's been designed for radio people and for podcasters, and it's very simple to connect live audio in decent quality over the web, and you can even record right within the browser. Clean Feed won't cost you anything to get started. It'll only take you 30 seconds to sign up, and within minutes you'll be doing your first live interview or podcast recording. Find out more at cleanfeed.net.
Well, let's talk about audio sound effects. There was a time when one of the great things about working at the BBC was you could get access to the sound of a Morris Minor going up a hill in 1958, and we're grateful for it. Now, anybody can have that, because they've all been put online. Have you had a listen?
I've had a listen. Anybody can have it. I'm not sure anyone would want it, though. having listened to them, they all sound like they were recorded in the 1970s on a Ewer, and the quality's not fantastic, and it's a... Without kind of pouring water on your excellent, exciting announcement about this, there's a marketplace in Palestine and, Spitfire flying over Stoke and things like that. And it's kind of, really? OK, how are we going to use these? Of course, it's
You'll
a tremendous
You'll be using
resource.
Them in one of your You're fireworks a... things. I just know you will.
It is worth pointing out that you do have to pay for them if you want to use them for any kind of project. So although they're all there free and you can, for your own personal listening, have that audio of a Spitfire flying over Stoke, if you want to put it in your podcast, you are going to have to go to their licensed page and pay $5, I think.
Are you suggesting that people who make podcasts always go and get licenses for the clips they use?
I'm sure nobody is Googling... whatever sound effects free WAV.
Anyway, it's on if you want to check them out. bbcsfx.acropolis.org.uk. And I liked them. I spent half an hour in the company of football matches from a bygone era.
I think that says more about your vintage, maybe, Trevor, than anything else.
I'm afraid it does. Let's talk about something a bit more modern. And Adam, I'm just going to hand over to you here. I've been reading about new ways of measuring radio audiences. Cridlin's written about them. You've commented. Just do us a little encapsulation, if you wouldn't
mind. Sure. So there's a company called Drive Time Metrics, and they recently announced they've got a patent for a new way of collecting and analysing in-vehicle media consumption, really, because it isn't just radio. It claims to get audiobooks, podcasts, you name it. Their sales pitch is that they'll be able to provide, you know, very live, very up-to-date analysis of what people are actually doing in the car. Now, this is an American company. It's aimed at the US, and where the majority of radio listening, I believe, is in car. There's no set number, but anything from 60 to 80%, depending on who you talk to. In the UK, it's worth pointing out, it's in the 20s, the amount of listening in car. We're much more listening around, both at home and at work. What they're trying to do, and now this is where it gets tricky, is there's not a great deal of detail. I did even go and have a look at the patent itself, believe it or not. I did my research.
Well, this is quality research. Thank you so much.
What they're trying to do is there's a thing that we used to call the car radio, but these days it's called a head unit because it's the thing that sits in the middle of the car that does more now than do the radio. In fact, the radio sometimes can be a bit low down the list of the things it does. And there's another development that's come along recently, which is your car has a SIM. And the idea of it is, basically, is if you have a crash, and maybe your airbag pops up, the car will place a call for you. So you've got a SIM, and as well as making 999 calls, or 112, because it's across Europe, there's also data on them, so you can do things like, so an obvious use is the sat-nav built into the car, never mind you can hook up Google Maps, a sat-nav built into the car can have live traffic. So what this company is trying to do is think of, I think, other ways of using that data and saying, okay, if I can work out that you're listening to this particular radio station at this particular time, I can send that data back using that car's in SIM, so not using my phone. We can collect that data and work out how many people are listening to, or how many people in the car at least are listening to a particular station at a given time, and look at the changes. Oh no, they've gone over to a podcast. Oh, they've gone to Spotify. Oh, they've come back to the radio or whatever, and individual radio stations. So that sounds quite exciting, but when you do a normal kind of survey of audio listening, you know how many people are listening to the radio or listening to the audio. You know the car radio is being played, but do you know how many people are in the car? You know, is it one person? Is it a family of six people in the car? Don't know. You also know who the person is. Is it a man? Is it a woman? What age they are? Things advertisers kind of want to know and radio stations want to know. It's not clear to me that there's any way of doing it. And then there's a whole thing of, and they talk about, well, they're going to scale this up quite big. Do we have any choice in the matter? Is my audio consumption, there's some T's and C's when I get the car that says, oh, by the way, we're going to monitor everything you listen to in your car. And we're going to report it back.
I love having you on this podcast because I feel as though I'm listening to an edition from 2 years in the future. Nick, any thoughts about
I think that the privacy issue is clearly one which has got to be addressed. And, you know, do you want a car manufacturer or a third party then knowing everything that you're listening to? You know, because listening is quite a personal
experience. It's a bit spooky, isn't it?
Well, it also, as well, you know, as you can now stream podcasts and that's a whole area which I think is of interest. That brings us on to the big issue around the future of measurement, and that's perhaps for another podcast.
Thank you very much for your praise, Adam. Where can we read more about this?
There's a Radio Inc. piece which has an interview with one of the managers behind it. It's kind of light on details, so you have to kind of read between
but
the lines.
But it's worth looking. Before we get on to what we've been listening to, the issue of gender balance on the radio has raised its head again with the departure of the last but one mainstream female presenter on LBC. I thought it would be appropriate to discuss this amongst the three of us white middle-aged men, for which I do apologise, Jane, if you're listening. What do we make of this?
Well, LBC is clearly a very male buy station in terms of its lineup, and Beverly Turner made the point and made it well. And actually, she did a really good show and listened to it quite a lot. You've got Sheila Fogarty on there now, which is great, and she's brilliant. Should there be more women on LBC? Absolutely. It is a very male audience as well. Adam will know if this figure's quite high or not, but 58% male in terms.
Yeah,
of
that sounds about right. You know. Although that's not staggeringly male. I mean, you know, if you're talk sport, you'd kind of understand it, but you know, that's a lot of women still listening to LBC.
It's still a big thing at the BBC, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's been that whole Tony Hall thing about, certainly amongst local radio, and undoubtedly all the changes of radio too have been driven largely from that. I think this is just a function of the station is big, and LBC has been growing, and it's been doing well, and it's gone properly national, and it gets a lot of focus and attention. They market themselves brilliantly, and actually with that comes some kind of responsibility. And you do have to, you know, it's necessarily...
Do you think they just don't give a shit? Is there that sense at Global of, we don't care?
It's hard to say. I think, I suspect they don't think about it quite the way, you know, if you're a public broadcaster on the BBC, you know, you've got to report it, you've got to put those numbers out there, and you're not going to, you simply won't get the kind of attention that, so...
How does this stuff play out in Europe, Nick?
There's many more women on the radio, funnily enough. It feels like that anyway. We've got to a bit of a kind of point in the UK now where it's a bit obvious that there's not enough women on the radio. And I think Radio 2 have, as you say, have just done something to catch up, if you like, with where they perhaps should be. But certainly in Europe, it feels less of an issue.
Our recommendations coming up after this.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
It's the January Radio Today Roundtable. I'm Trevor Dan. I've got Nick Goodman and Adam Bowie with me. And we're going to talk about some things we think you might like to listen to. And I'm going to go first, because I mentioned it earlier, a thing with big credits. The RFK tapes, I don't know whether any of you have heard this. This is yet another one of these real crime, real adventure stories. And this is about the death of Robert Kennedy. Here's a clip.
Senator Robert F. Kennedy has just won the California Democratic primary.
My thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there.
But to get to the White House, you'll have to pass through the hotel's kitchen pantry.
Senator Kennedy has been shot. Is that possible?
No. Oh, my God. Senator Kennedy has been shot, and possibly shot in the head.
Within seconds, a young gunman is tackled by the crowd, revolver in hand, instantly joining the likes of John Wilkes Booth, James Earl Ray, and Lee Harvey Oswald as one of the most notorious political assassins in American history.
He still has the gun is pointed at me right at this moment.
Men normally known by all three of their names.
We know who committed the crime.
But this man,
his name,
only two,
appears to be,
well, technically,
Sirhan.
Just one.
Sirhan.
24-year-old Sirhan Sirhan.
Sirhan Sirhan, guilty of murder in the first degree.
Sirhan Sirhan was formally sentenced to death today.
Sirhan Sirhan is the murderer of Senator Robert Kennedy, and only he alone is the murderer.
Sirhan Sirhan was locked away, and all the evidence collected by police, photographs, bullets, and hours of witness recordings, that was locked away too.
We've done it because someday... somebody, for purposes best known to themselves, is going to try to prove that Sirhan didn't do it, that this was a conspiracy. We knew it would happen.
Well, 50 years later...
It wasn't an investigation at all. It was a big cover-up.
It's happening.
I just love this style of American podcast documentary making. There's a line quite early on where the guy who's presenting it says... In the 18 months I've spent researching this project, 18 months, for God's sake, man. But it's very deep, isn't it? It's a deep dive into a small topic.
And there's some great audio in there, and there's the famous commentary of when he got shot, and there's a conspiracy theory attached to it. So, yeah.
I
listened to the trailer, and the trailer was excellent. So,
well, the end is not what you expect. If you're expecting...
Well, he's still alive.
I'm not saying anything because that would be unfair, but it is not the conspiracy story you expect. Did you hear it, Adam?
I confess I haven't said it.
Okay, well, off you go with your first one.
So my first one is Party. So I do a thing every year, actually. I get the Radio Times and I start scrolling through it. And,
Sado.
I publish these too, Trevor. But actually, the really interesting thing is I'm always looking for things I hadn't spotted. And there was a great sitcom a few years back called Party. Started at the Edinburgh Fringe, actually. It's run by a guy called Tom Basden, who's written loads of good stuff. And there's people like Tim Key in it, Katie Wicks. And it ran for about 3 series. They're really short, so there's only 12 of them. It's kind of Fawlty Towers-like in its length. About a bunch of students at the time who want to create a new political party, which is an interesting thought a few years later. But they came back for a one-off, and it's 6 years on, and they all left studenthood, and it's very silly comedy. They're all heading up to a Trump-owned golf course in Scotland. That's the premise of the whole thing. It's half an hour. It's a one-off. It says on the BBC site that it's the final one, so I don't know if we'll get them back, but I just absolutely loved that series.
Here's a clip from Party.
And I mean, could we stop before Trump Turnberry, just wee-wise?
Just hold it in, please, Dunks.
No, I am. I'm holding it tightly.
You hold it in a metaphorical sense, Dunks.
Right. I don't know how to do that.
As in, don't actually grip yourself through your cords like a little boy would.
Yes, it works better like this, though, Mel, sort of pinching the nozzle.
Nozzle?
You call it a nozzle? Well, not all of it.
Oh, please stop that, Duncan. Mel and I shouldn't have to sit next to someone touching himself.
Pinching myself, really?
I mean, it's practically a Me Too moment.
Just ignore him.
We can't. We're all squeezed up back here like sardines in a can.
Yeah, you'll have to stop pinching it in that case, I'm afraid, Duncan.
OK, I mean, I can let go.
Yes,
but
if you would.
But I might need someone else to pinch it for me.
Oh, my God.
Shotgun, not me.
Shotgun, not
I'm sorry to say this, Adam, but I did think it had a lot in common with a lot of BBC comedy. It just wasn't very funny.
Oh, I like the characters. I think you can come back from the characters.
Quite a lot of knob jokes. Okay, well, whatever turns. Nick, let's have your first.
I want to recommend something that was recommended to me by a French colleague, actually, someone who works in the digital department of Radio France, and he says, you must listen to these 20,000 hertz, apologies for the French accent. So 20,000 hertz is the stories behind the world's most recognisable and interesting sounds. So there's a chap called Dallas Taylor, he's an LA-based sound designer, and every programme, every episode is this beautifully crafted deep dive into a particular sound or something we're familiar with. So if you've got an Xbox, there's a startup sound to that. How did that come about? Or the Amen Break, one of those famous sampled pieces of music. Or the sound design for Hamilton, the show. He presents these in a beautiful way. We were talking beforehand about BBC Radio 4. It's got that sense of quality about every episode is beautifully crafted. And so if, like me, you're into sound and sound design and sounds that surround us all the time, it's a wonderful treat for you.
Here's a clip from their latest edition, which is actually, as they explain, a remix of one of their favourites. It's about space.
Let's go from planet to planet in our solar system to find out what each surface would sound like to our ears. To be clear though, you'd pretty much die instantly everywhere, except for here. But for these examples, we're going to pretend to have superhuman powers that will keep us alive. So with that disclaimer out of the way, let's start closest to the sun.
Places like Mercury and these rocky bodies with no atmospheres would be similar to being in space. There would not be much sound, if any.
Well, Mercury is an airless body, so, you know, we're back to listening for Mercury quakes, essentially. That would be, you know, really the only source of sound.
And you could only hear these Mercury quakes if your head was pressed up against the rock, because there's no atmosphere for traditional sound to travel through. Next up, Venus.
In my mind, what sound would be like on the surface, because you have this really dense atmosphere, much denser than Earth's, the sound would be more like or tend toward what things sound like when you're underwater. If you could imagine something in between air and water, that kind of density, you're running your hand through that and you would feel that.
Thanks for that, Nick. 20,000 hertz. We talked about it once before on this podcast. I think there's a show about the pips.
Okay. I'll have to check that one out.
We're checking that one out. Let's go back to Adam for your second one.
Okay, so the second one I've got is something that went out on Radio 3 over Christmas called Sound Walk.
Slow radio.
Yeah, it is. This is 3 hours, so take your time over this one. Actually, it's probably only a couple of weeks left on BBC Sound site, so you might need to be quicker. It's presented by a guy called Horatio Clare. He's got a fantastic name. And it's him going on basically a real-time walk. And then the walk is in the Black Forest in Germany. And he is talking about wanderers. So he's sort of semi-wandering during this thing and the whole kind of aspect of the idea that people would just go for a walk somewhere and not know where they're going to go.
Let me just interrupt you with this clip and then we'll come back to it.
Acorns underfoot, leaf fall through the air, so still, not a breath of wind. And it's that first phase of a walk where you leave the sounds of civilization behind and the motor car and the engine and walk into quite another world, which smells leafy and piney, where the ground is soft underfoot. And it's that optimistic and wonderful moment where you set out into unknown territory, full of hope and expectation.
So there's a man walking around the Black Forest and there's a bit of music playing and it's going to go on for another 2 hours and 57 minutes. But it's compulsive, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. He's obviously done an enormous amount of research. He is not just mulling to himself as he walks around because he's talking about historic things. The music is really neatly embedded into it. There's not so much complete pieces as it might fade in and then fade out. And it's not just classical music. There's a few pieces of folk music in there as well. Anything that's kind of relevant to it. And it's just a different kind of radio. And it's quite nice. I love to hear experimental stuff like that.
Yeah, it's wonderfully atmospheric as well. It really takes you there. And we talk in radio a lot about the movies in your mind and the pictures. And straight away, I was there. You know, it's recorded beautifully. So you've got the sound of the footsteps and the birds in the background. And he's got a great way of describing what he sees. You know, say what you see. And I really enjoyed it. I didn't listen to all 3 hours, admittedly. But I am going to try and rejoin the wanderer as he carries on through.
Because I think you could do that with a show like this. It seems to me like you could listen to 40 minutes and then not hear any for a week and then think, I fancy popping back to the Black Forest to see how things are going.
I'm not no spoilers here, but there's not quite the same reveal as I think your Robert Kennedy
shame
podcast. Not big finale like that.
Let's have Nick's second. Thank you for that.
Well, I want to recommend Switched on Pop.
This is good. I'd never heard of this till you sent me the clip.
So I am anyone who knows me knows I'm a massive fan of pop music. And
microphone pops,
indeed.
As we've just heard too.
Anyone who knows me knows I'm a massive fan of pop music. And this is a podcast breaking down the music of pop hits. So there's a musicologist and a songwriter and producer, and they deconstruct pop songs, pop genres. Sometimes they have guests in the studio. So, for example, they'll look at Havana by Camila Cabello and they'll discuss the importance of the 808 drum machine in that and the Cuban Montuno piano and how those blend together. Or they'll go back and look at Alanis Morissette's You Ought to Know and talk about the harmonic motion in the chorus and the tension and the anger of the lyrics. So if you're a fan of pop songs and the art and the craft of writing and producing songs, it's a fabulous podcast and they clearly love doing it.
Here's a clip from the latest edition where, and don't go away, I know it's January, they talked about sleigh bells, but not sleigh bells in Christmas records, sleigh bells used in other records.
So we both prepared a couple of different tracks and we've also brought in some listener suggestions. Do you want to kick us off?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I'm very excited to share our first selection of, what is it, non-holiday songs featuring sleigh bells?
We need a much pithier title.
NHSB. Wait, I got this. NHSSB. Nehuspas.
Nehuspas. Okay.
Okay.
What do you got?
So our first Nehuspa is Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart, which is written by Jim Steinman and is, you know, just an incredible song.
You're going back in time.
Yeah, yeah. This is a song I've loved, listened to so many times, transcribed, and yet I never really noticed that there were sleigh bells in here. Oh. All right, let's go right to the moment. All right, here we go. Get ready, Chuck.
Oh,
are you prepared?
No.
Here it comes.
Wow.
There's a clip from Switched On Pop. Thank you for that, Nick Goodman. I just wanted to draw everybody's attention to the latest fantastic piece of work by Kathy Fitzgerald, who's a great sound designer and radio producer. And she made a thing for Radio 4. And I think the best way I can describe what it is just to play the beginning.
I'm in the British Library on a dark, wintry afternoon. After lunch, reading. I'm sleepy. I lay my head down. My cheek comes to rest on my old copy of Dickens's Great Expectations, ear pressed to the cover, like a seashell. Betwixt and between, I can hear it. The trail of Miss Havisham's dress along a dusty wooden floor. Mice in the wedding feast. The wind and the rain on the marsh. I've always thought of novels as silent, mute objects. But now I realise they're full of sound. What will we learn if we start listening to them?
Well, if that doesn't whet your appetite, I don't think you're interested in radio. Just the fact... Did anybody hear this at
all?
I mean, it's...
Again,
it's
atmospheric
weird.
And a bit weird.
Yeah.
And some nice use of just kind of low drones.
And sort of but it's reflective and it doesn't have a narrative. You don't know where it's going or even care. It's just...
It's kind of prog rock of radio, really.
That's exactly what it is. It's the new album by Genesis, isn't it? It's a new quadraphonic album by Yes. Talking of quad, one final thing. 8D. What do we know about 8D? Because I got given for Christmas a pair of AirPods. And I must say they're brilliant. I'm not just saying that because I'm hoping for a bit of sponsorship. AirPods are marvellous things. And my daughter said to me, have you heard anything on 8D? And I said, no, I haven't. And she said, oh, well, get on your phone and get onto YouTube and just put in 8D. And there's all these tracks, including famous ones by Queen, that have been remixed in what is known as 8D, which is, if you're as old as we are, it's basically quad. So you're in the middle of this great sound picture that is all around you, just listening off your little AirPods. And it is, I mean, I can't demonstrate it, obviously, in a mono podcast, but it is weird.
I think.
Are you interested?
I don't know that particular, I don't know what 8D is, but the whole kind of thing of this kind of surround sound, what you can do, obviously things binaural has been around for a long time, and how you can deliver it is really interesting. And I always find it, you know, it's always slightly disappointing that it's the video part of audio and video that gets actually the more sound thing. So now, you know, as we talk CES is on, you know, people are building Dolby Atmos into televisions. And you've 5.1, 7.1, 9.1 surround home systems is a big thing for movies. And it's almost a shame that there's not an easy way to deliver audio in those formats.
I've never heard of it. I think I'd be more excited if 1D were getting back together and had a new record. So that's all I can say about
that's
that.
That's a good place to end. Nick Goodman, thank you very much for joining us. And thank you, Adam Bowie. This has been the Radio Today Roundtable for January. And I would just like to thank, I've credited Muddy Knees, actually Bauer own this desk and this room, and I'm the first person to use these marvellous new headphones, which they've just put in for us, and they're made by Canford Audio, and they're DT770 Pro. So these are the sort of things that chaps like you use, Nick?
Absolutely. I wouldn't be seen with anything other than a Canford Audio DT whatever.
All right, here's a bit of 8D in 1D before we join Stu.
Thank you, Trevor and Nick and Adam. David Lloyd's Radio Moment still to come after some resolutions. at james.crit.land. I'm James Critland, the radio futurologist. This week, New Year's resolutions for radio everywhere. Well, welcome to 2019. How are your personal New Year's resolutions going? I thought I'd suggest a few for the radio industry. Number one, lower your ad load. 12 or even 15 minutes of ads an hour is a poor experience if you compare that to many of our competitors. Now, it's easier said than done, but this is a needle that needs grasping at some point before somebody else does it for us. Rethink how you make multi-platform radio on a very basic level. If you never tell the time on a radio show, you can rerun that radio show at a different time. And if you focus on making great short-form content, you can use that on the air and online, in podcasts or in more interactive services. A great piece of radio deserves to be used more than once. So what does that mean for how you make it? Focus on delighting your audience. Commercial radio exists, yes, for ratings and revenue, but without ratings comes no revenue, and without a focus on delighting our audience, we have no ratings. Everything we do should delight audiences first and foremost, which means treating them with respect. Focus less on tradition and more on innovation. The past is a different country where we did things differently. Radio's strength is that we can change the way we do things quickly. There's no room for doing things the way we've always done it in the radio industry of 2019 because we've never had the competition that we have now. And no more antique microphones. My goodness. Some of the radio industry seem bizarrely happy to use pictures of old-fashioned microphones, 1940s transmitters and old Bakelite receivers. We use these icons in our trade associations or our staff newsletters and sometimes even our radio station logos. Our industry isn't like this anymore. Please stop with all of that already. Now, while radio is still incredibly strong as a medium, perhaps 2019 can be a year for radio reinvention to make us even stronger. Here's hoping so. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. And now on the Radio Today programme, here's David Lloyd.
David Lloyd, Radio Moment.
15 years is a long time on breakfast, isn't it? Not least when you talk constantly each day for 3 hours. Well done, Nick Ferrari.
When I went into hospital before, I went to A&E and my wife took my tablets with her to show that I'd had my morphine.
Right. Tablet.
She couldn't understand what was my wife was telling her.
Because she, because of the language problems, obviously.
She gave me another dose of morphine.
Oh, Lord. You're lucky to be here.
I know, Nick. You don't have to tell me.
I'm telling you. You're lucky to be here, Ken.
They had me in hospital 9 days, Nick. 9 days. And they wouldn't let me out. I found out later on I had to be resuscitated. When they was taking me down for an X-ray.
Yes.
Non-compensamento.
Non-compensamento? Oh, yes. No. With mentals? Yeah.
I refused to let them have my tablets. Well, I was in no condition to refuse. The next day I woke up.
Yep.
I was on a drip.
Oh, man, alive.
Well, I thought I'd had an operation. No.
Are you better now?
Yes.
You're lucky to be alive, Ken.
I'm lucky to be here.
You're damn lucky to be here.
And so it went on. Nick Ferrari, who began on The Breakfast Show on LBC, back then in Chrysalis ownership, this week in 2004. Much like 2019, this week's always been a week of breakfast changes. 9 years ago, there was something new on Radio 2.
BBC News at 7:05.
Well, good morning, Moira Stewart. How are you?
Hello to you.
Are you okay?
I'm hanging in there.
All right. Now, listen, would you mind awfully if we gave you 3 cheers, as it's so good to have you back on the BBC?
You are too good to
me. Can we do that? Is that all right?
You're gorgeous.
All right, 3 cheers for Moira Stewart, back where she belongs, on the beep. Quiet ones, of course. Hip, hip.
Wake up to Evans rather than Wogan as he took over Radio 2's breakfast shift this week in 2010. The chap who preceded Wogan on that show began this week 27 years ago.
Diana Ross first today. Come see about me. 7:26. It's BBC Radio 2. And this is the breakfast show you've been waiting for. We have a very simple but stimulating menu. First, there is plenty of the music you know, the music of your life. Then there is basic useful information like travel, traffic, sport, weather, And, of course, the news. You'll start your day entertained and informed. Who could ask for more than that?
Brian Hayes taking over the Radio 2 breakfast show from Derek Jameson this week in 1992. There's been a lot of water under a lot of bridges since this breakfast show made its debut 15 years ago this week.
And good morning, everyone. Welcome to the exciting new sound of Radio 1.
Wake up one morning, have a sweet...
You too, a beautiful day from Radio 1. Morning, Britain. I am Chris Moyles, the saviour. Hello.
And he sort of was the saviour, frankly. Chris Moyles beginning on Radio 1 Breakfast this week in 2004. His spell was the longest ever to date, and I suspect the longest there'll ever be. He's now doing good things, of course, on Radio X. Breakfast on Radio 1 from this week in 1981 saw this voice.
When you are a king, oh, people never touch a thing. When you're a king, that's White Plains, and When You Were a King from 1971. Well, I think that instead of doing something sensible, I think we ought to have a chat, Symes, don't you? I think we ought to just sit here and waffle, just you and me.
Yes,
and
indeed, me. Yes. I wondered that for a moment. If I was there, I'm looking forward to watching you play football on Sunday.
Yes, I'm not quite sure that I'm going to be able to make it in time for the game, you know.
You can't wriggle out of that, really.
Not how you said that. No, I'm not sure. I'm certainly going to get there for half-time.
I shall be there for half-time, and I shall be keen to watch you play football, because I see that you're in the team.
You never play.
No, I can't. I have this doctor's note.
Doctor's note? No, flat feet?
No, I tell you, the truth is that when I first played for Radio 1, yes. It was in the days when Blackers was our main goalie, and Edmonds used to head everything.
Mike Reed, who began on the Radio 1 Breakfast Show this week 38 years ago, talking there on one of those famous handovers to Simon Bates, who himself began on Smooth Breakfast across the UK 8 years ago this week. This chap managed just 15 months on Radio 1 Breakfast, starting this week in 94.
Good morning, this is Stephen the Posse. How are you? Another warm day, up to 20 Celsius, mainly clear and partly sunny, right now 13. So today, exam revision tips, album reviews, the movies, the TV, the papers, the traffic, the newsagent, voiceover man, the Posse, it's all right here.
Good morning from WhatsApp.
Steve Wright, who began his short stint on Radio 1 Breakfast 25 years ago. The Radio 2 sound used to be very different from now, and early risers would enjoy the immaculate tones and perfect, engaging presentation of Ray Moore. It's 30 years this week since he died.
Yes, getting us out of the news, little old Benny King. But he's gone now, so let's bother our pretty little heads about him. It's a Thursday morning, 28th of January, which will do rather nicely. And one or two odd bods have thought of wonderful excuses to go and feel rather better later on this morning. Doug Cockwill, who's in Upton-on-Seven in Worcestershire, he says when he married Lynn, a clause was included in the contract.
The great Ray Moore. We lost him this week in 89, and that was his final show year before he died. 2019 sees the first full year of the new local evening shows on BBC Local Radio. And it was 6 years ago that they were networked in the first place.
Here we are then, a new year, a new show, and a new presenter. Quite exciting, really, isn't it? Well, it's excellent to have you company, and you're very, very welcome to the programme that links together the BBC local radio stations across England and the Channel Islands. Every day, I'll unearth for you some radio gems, those little bits of local radio gold dust that I think...
Mark Forrest on the first networked BBC local radio programme this week in 2003, and heard Mark on PM on Radio 4 the other night, doing good things on the bulletins. The BBC is a deliciously complex place. When Carrie Gracie turned up to host the Today programme this week last year, she was one of the lead stories.
It's 6 o'clock on Monday, the 8th of January. Good morning. This is Today with Carrie Gracie and John Humphreys.
The headlines this morning. Theresa May is expected to promote more...
The BBC's China editor, Carrie Gracie, has stepped down from the role in protest at what she called an indefensible pay gap between men and women at the corporation.
In an open letter addressed to licence fee payers, Ms Gracie said the BBC was facing a crisis of trust and accused it of breaking equality law.
And a big story in all the papers, pretty much, the resignation of somebody called Carrie Gracie as the BBC's China editor. It's the main story for The Times, on the front page of Telegraph, The Eye, The Sun and so on. The Times says her decision reflects the depth of anger felt across the corporation over pay inequality between men and women. It says 134 female employees at the BBC have issued a statement expressing wholehearted support for her, and the revolt represents one of the biggest crises to hit the BBC since Lord Hall took over as Director General in 2013. The BuzzFeed news website, which was the first to publish her open letter to licence fee payers, describes it as explosive and a bombshell. And at this point, given that Carrie is
what's
sitting...
What's happening next, John?
Well, indeed.
Where are we going from here?
And given that you are sitting next to me in the studio, perhaps listeners would expect me to do a really tough interview with you about that bombshell letter, but the BBC has rules on impartiality, which mean that presenters can't suddenly turn into interviewees on the programmes they are presenting. However, well, maybe. Anyway, you are going to be doing an interview on Woman's Hour here on Radio 4 at 10 o'clock. But just a very quick thought. You're not allowed, you know, well, you know the rules.
We're not doing an interview.
Not doing
but you're going to ask me one question.
The reaction has been quite a big one, hasn't it?
It has. It's been very moving, actually. And the two things that have struck me most about it and moved me most. And one is, I think, the scale of feeling, not just among BBC women, but also just more widely across the country and also...
The Kerry Gracie story unfolding this week last year. So with Jeremy Vine taking over Jimmy Young's lunchtime show 16 years ago...
Good afternoon and the warmest of welcomes to the Jeremy Vine show. Very nice to be with you.
Juice Liverpool merging into Capital this week last year.
So from us, Jay and Ellie, that is it. That was our last show. But not only that, the last show of Juice Liverpool.
Yeah.
But things are about to get extremely exciting.
Chilton, Hereward, Horizon, Northants, Kew, Broadland and STR becoming Heart 10 years ago.
Chilton Radio, 96.9, the Heart FM.
And a surprise news story 3 years ago.
Here's the latest.
From Global's newsroom, I'm Fiona Winchester. David Cameron has died. David Bowie has died after a secret 18-month battle with cancer. He was 69.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David, James, Trevor and guests Nick and Adam. We'll be back next week with another episode of...
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.